Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on depression when we come back. You know, in 1970, the world food supply was about 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. Today, it's down to less than 38 days. Now, we Americans produce grain for export, all right, but then we turn around and import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support the global 2000 population reduction program. Now, all of this globalization may be good for business, but globalization is bad for you and it's bad for me. Back in 1940, we all had a pantry full of food to feed our families for a year or more. Today, we have a three-day supply in our refrigerators, and now we've been taught to believe in our supermarket system of just-in-time delivery to feed us all forever. But over the past 60 years, you and I have traded a one-year supply in our pantries for a three-day supply in our refrigerators. And these global 2000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, plague, disease, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years, or so they tell us through the Club of Rome. These evil madmen with their global 2000 agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for. And I say let them die for their cause. And then lets you and I live for ours. Let me show you from the scripture how to be a live survivor instead of a dead victim. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. The Privateer. The Privateer is put out by William Buckler of Noosa Heads, Queensland, Australia. It's one of the three top newsletters, economic newsletters that I recommend to my students. The three are, number one, the International Forecaster. It's bigger, cheaper, and more comprehensive. It puts out about 20 pages twice a week. The second one that I recommend is The Privateer. It's 12 pages twice a month. Not quite as comprehensive, but it's better especially for lay people because Buckler has a real knack for education and for making the complex in economics simple. He's probably the best of the writers insofar as his format is concerned. And I think he's right on point with his editorial comment. He, in the November number 594, excuse me, it's number 594, it's the early January issue. It's the 2008 early January issue, and you might write to Buckler and ask for this particular issue, number 594. Not note that down. I'll give it to you a couple more times. It's the first issue of 2008. It's called The Privateer, William A.M. Buckler. Now, here's some of his commentary concerning the economic meltdown going on around the world right now as I speak. He says, consumer prices are climbing around the world, and the speed of the climb varies in some places faster and in other places slower, but they're all climbing. So note that they're all climbing. In future, these prices will climb much faster than they're climbing today. Behind these coming global events lies a gigantic con job perpetrated by Lord Keynes in 1936, which shifted the historical definition of inflation from an increase in the money supply or quantity, that is, in general circulation, to prices. Now, according to Keynes, if prices didn't climb, there was no inflation. If it was seen that money prices for goods were climbing, then there was, in fact, inflation. This is a trick, and this trick shifted the focus of attention from economic cause to effect. Attention was diverted from an increase in the quantity of money, which is ever and always the true cause of climbing money prices. For more than three generations, governments and central banks and bankers have inflated the quantity of money in circulation while at the same time engaging in futile efforts to counter the economic effects of their own inflation. They're constantly fighting and constantly battling inflation. Inflation is in the news. Constantly. They have used price controls, rationing, regulation, higher taxes. They even go so far as to offer subsidies to bring some high prices down. And then when all of these futile events fail, they have resorted to cooking the books by ignoring any inconvenient price rises. Now, it's a fundamental truth that in order to alter an effect, one must act to alter the cause of that effect. This is the essence of the first law of causality, the law of cause and effect. If you do not want climbing money prices, then do not inflate the quantity of money in the first place. The only valid definition of inflation is an increase in the quantity of money. Deflation is a decrease in the quantity of money. It's just that simple. I want to pause here and make an observation. You know, they're constantly talking about the avoidance of deflation. What Ben Bernanke has promised is that they will drop money out of helicopters if they need to keep the economy liquid so as to avoid deflation. Well, excuse me. Hang on a second. If the opposite to inflation is deflation, and if we are constantly battling inflation, then does that tell us that inflation is bad or that inflation is our enemy and inflation is something that we want to avoid? Well, then, wouldn't the opposite be deflation? Wouldn't deflation be our friend? Isn't deflation then what we want? Isn't deflation what we should be working for? And I'm just a plumber. But if you're battling fire, then isn't water your friend? Now, frankly, if you take a look at deflation, the United States went through a deflationary period in the 1930s. And people's memory of that deflationary period was all bad. We had plenty of goods, but we didn't have much money. Beginning about 1930 through about 1937. So there was a dearth, there was a shortage of money to buy the goods that were in the stores. Now, in the 1920s, we had inflation. And the Federal Reserve was printing money, and these were called the Roaring Twenties. Now, these Roaring Twenties ended in a massive deflation, which everybody was sad about. Everybody was happy about the inflation. You know, when you're out inflating the economy and blowing up the bubble, it's all fun and it's party time. The hangover comes after the party is over. Then wouldn't our common sense tell us that maybe we shouldn't party quite so hard? Then maybe we wouldn't have nearly the hangover. And that's where we're at today. We have this roaring 90s through the Bill Clinton years and the Alan Greenspan period from 1988 through about 2003 or 4. And Alan Greenspan inflated the economy, and we had these boom times, and God, everybody was just happy as a clam at high tide. Then we came to a recession in 2000. To avoid the effects of that deflation, that recession, they inflated the money supply some more. So it carried us forward for another 6 years. Now here we are today with the housing bubble that's collapsing around our ears. We got this war going in Iraq, draining about 2 billion a week? I think it's something like that. $100 billion a year had been thrown down a rat hole there called Iraq. And of course they tell us this is necessary and imperative, and I don't doubt it. It probably is. Not because we need war on terror, but because we need to keep this tottering economy afloat. And to do that, they got to print ever prodigious quantities of money and put it out into circulation to keep this thing going. I just saw a number the other day. This ought to shock your eyeballs or your ear bowls here. 38% of the economy is predicated upon printed money. Printed money. Well, hell, if that's true, then only 62% of the economy is based upon production. And they tell us that 70% plus of the economy is consumer spending. Well, for crying out loud, then only... Well, think about that for a second. If 38% is money creation and 70% is consumer spending, where in the hell does production come in? I just saw another number the other day that just blew my socks right off of me. We're exporting $142 billion a year, and we're importing more than $800 billion a year. Now, let's see, you're exporting $142 and you're importing $800. What the hell does that tell you? It tells you that you're on a binge. And there isn't any way in God's green earth that you're going to turn that thing around. Our economy is as phony as a Federal Reserve note. And these are the numbers that they're feeding us, and hell, they may be lies. They lie to us about everything else, so I'm not sure that you can believe everything that you see here, but the moral of the story is that if the numbers that the government's giving us is true, it's a catastrophe in the wings waiting to happen. Now, Buckler and Bob Chapman and James Cook, these are called newsletter writers, and these are conservative people who write about economic events. These are called economic newsletters. And they're telling us they're a barometer. They're telling us that there's a storm brewing, and they've been telling us that for 30 years. And we have gone about our profligate ways, and we have borrowed and spent and borrowed and spent and borrowed and spent. Until now, the average American believes that borrowing and spending is the normal way of life. It's not something that's abnormal, unusual, that you do temporarily and then you correct it. It's something that you're born to. It's an economic status, and it's the modality for operating an economy, and that's the way we live our lives. Consumption is the way we live. It's the prodigal son being lived out in front of your eyeballs. And then this prodigal son story comes to a bad end. when this guy's money runs out, which is what's happened to us here in America, our money's gone. Now what are we going to do? Now there's tough times ahead, and there's a solution to tough times. We've been through tough times in the past, but this is going to be a tough time that is going to be the tough time of tough times. And those that are better prepared for it will live through it better, and those that are poorer prepared will die in it. And I mean die in it. Now, he says the theory and history of sound money by Ludwig von Mises. Now, sound money is gold and silver coin. That's a dirty word to a banker, and it's a strange and foreign concept to Americans. Gold and silver coin, gold and silver money. It's called hard money. It's called sound money. We haven't had sound money in this country since 1933. President Roosevelt took the gold out of circulation, and then in 1964, Lyndon Johnson added the coup de grace. He took silver coin out of circulation. He didn't physically go out and pick it up. What they did was they created money policy. And the money policy drove the good money out. Bad money drives good money out. Well, this guy, Ludwig von Mises, is the champion that all of the sound money advocates go to. He's like the guru at the top of the mountain. And so he's referred to constantly. It's called the Austrian School of Economics. And this fellow Buckler here is one of the proponents of this Austrian School of Economics that the average American has never even heard of, wouldn't recognize the term. So let me introduce you to this concept. He says it's impossible to grasp the meaning of the idea of sound money if one does not realize that it was devised as an instrument for the protection of civil liberties against despotic inroads on the part of government. Ideologically, it belongs in the same class with political constitutions and bills of rights. And when our Constitution was created in 1787, 5 years later in 1792, our Congress enacted what we called the Coinage Act of 1792, which provided for no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. 17 words. No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. We Americans used to have silver and gold coin. And when we did, we became the wealthiest and most powerful, productive, and prosperous nation in the world. When we went off gold and silver, we became the world's number one debtor nation. We're now poor. They constantly refer to America is the richest nation in the world. That's preposterous poppycock. Excuse me? Hold on a second. Since when is a debtor wealthy? Who in the hell has been educating you? What makes you think that when you're in debt, you have wealth? It is true that Americans are living in big houses and driving new cars, but they don't own the houses and they don't own the cars they're driving. Those are owned by somebody else. That's not wealth. That's poverty. Now, if you want to call that wealth, get after it. But then, when you can't make the payments, they come and take the houses away from you, and that's what's happening now with the real estate meltdown. Most of you people listening to me right now do not own your homes. One bright spot in the American economy is that one-third of Americans own their own homes. One-third. They actually own them. I don't know if they own their automobiles on top of that, but the good sign is that a third of us own our homes. Two-thirds of us don't. That's bad. Because those two-thirds aren't going to be able to make their payments. And when they can't make their payments, well, then the next step is called foreclosure. Now, the demand for constitutional guarantees and for bills of rights was a reaction against arbitrary rule and the non-observance of old customs by kings. The postulate of sound money was first brought up as a response to the princely practice of debasing the coinage. It was later carefully elaborated and perfected in the age which, through the experience of the American continental currency, the paper money of the French Revolution, and the British restriction period, had learned what a government can do with a nation's currency system. This reaction spawned the Age of Enlightenment. It's called the classical gold standard. Now, I want to point out this classical gold standard didn't get started here in the United States nor France or Great Britain. It got started at Mount Sinai with Moses with these words, "Thou shalt not steal." That's the basis of the monetary system of Anglo-Saxons. Next, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. This thing of dealing with interest and usury, this thing of dealing in paper money or unjust weights and balances, stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, mortgages, deeds of trust, CDOs, SIVs, all of this commercial trash that's coming back to bite us in the butt is prohibited by Moses through God, or by God through Moses at Mount Sinai. I mean, hell, this is ancient. This goes back thousands of years. From time to time, we human mortals have adopted that principle or practice in our constitutions and in our governmental practices to rein in the excesses of our kings. That's what we did after King George in 1787. We went back to gold and silver coin. George Mason was the architect of those 17 words in Article 1, Section 10. No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now listen to Buckler again. On page 2, he says, the classical gold standard. The central virtue of the classical gold standard is that it takes the purchasing power of money outside the control of government, commercial bankers, and even central bankers. It's a part and parcel of the entire political idea of limited government. In the American Constitution, for example, the powers of the federal government are specifically enumerated. For instance, they're numbered. The government has no powers whatsoever beyond those that are so listed. To act outside these numbered delegated powers is unconstitutional. The classical gold standard, being outside the powers of all limited governments, is the real economic means by which the living individual, whether man, woman, or child, hold their economic purchasing power in the form of gold coin in hand, outside the reach of all government. It's a wild new concept. Today, as the economy is tanking, what is it that people want to hear? They want to hear their presidential candidates come up with a plan. We want our government to save us. We want our government to solve this problem. Boys and girls, it's the government that caused this problem. If the government caused the problem, what in the hell makes us think that the government can solve it? What kind of insanity would tell us that the arsonist who set fire to our house is the guy that we should call upon to put out the fire? I mean, that's preposterous on its face, isn't it? And I was watching the news the other day, and Hillary Clinton says we've got to have an economic stimulus package. The president was talking with the plunge protection team the other day, and says, oh boy, we gotta watch this economy carefully. Well, the government's been watching the economy now since the 1930s. I mean, we got off on this government getting involved in the economy with the Federal Reserve Act back in 1913. How has it worked out so far? And we went from a virtual no debt to a $9 trillion debt. Our government now is the backer, the lender of last resort. Now they're telling us that they want us to get involved in the housing market. And then we're going to bail out the banks. Boys and girls, honest to God, do you people believe that you have enough money that you can bail out the banks and the housing market? Like you did the savings and loans back in the 1990s? Yeah, honest, do you think you can do that? Well, okay, you guys go ahead and get after it. I think I'll sit on the sidelines and watch. Now, there's a political nature of gold coinage. Gold coins are anonymous, which fits in with our Fourth Amendment that protects us in our person, houses, papers, and effects. If you want privacy, you want gold coin. After all, a gold coin is pretty anonymous. You know, when you're holding one in your hand, it doesn't have any serial numbers on it like those $100 bills and those 10s and 20s that you're running around with, or those checks that leave a paper trail everywhere. Government hates gold and silver because they lose control. There's no profit in gold and silver for government. There's great profit for boys and girls, but not for government. So there's been a continuous argument, a continuous struggle between people on the one hand and government on the other for control of the money supply. Right now, government's in control. They're in control of the banks. They're in control of the treasury. They're in control of your markets. But you know, the bright spot is that you and I do not have to participate in these markets. And you and I have gold and silver available to us, and we can deal anonymously, privately, in private business. And so gold coins are anonymous, and all they have on them is the imprints on both sides that state the quality and the fineness and the quantity of gold in them measured by weight. That in itself enables both parties in any exchange or transaction of the gold coin to maintain his or her economic privacy. Such privacy is not possible with government-printed paper money. And all such notes all have identification and serial numbers on them. And that's where your taxes come from, kids. You want more tax? What you want is more government interference. Exchange is a prerequisite of liberty. As the medium of exchange, gold coinage is at the center of the individual's liberty. Lord Acton stated the value of liberty clearly. He said, "Liberty is not a means to a political end. It is itself the highest political end." Ludwig von Mises eloquently described the central point of classical liberalism. He said, "The idea of liberalism starts with the freedom of the individual. It rejects all rule of some persons over others, and it knows no master, no master peoples, and no subject peoples, just as within the nation itself it distinguishes between no masters and no serfs." Gold coinage's money makes all of this possible. Now I hear people constantly bewailing slavery in America. And they're constantly bringing up and dredging up, "Oh my God, we were slaves in America." Well, okay, so you were slaves in America, but today we're slaves in America, and it knows no color barrier. Now, economic serfdom comes from paper money. And all of us, blacks and whites and Orientals and Indians and everybody, is in the same boat. We're all slaves to the same political system. Like it or lump it. But that's where we are. Now, if you want to escape that, we go back to gold and silver coin. Bottom line, we go back to gold and we go back to silver coin. And if we don't, well, then we stay in the same economic slavery that we have been enveloped in since 1914, since World War I. Now, exchange is a prerequisite of liberty. Did you catch that? That is, being able to buy, sell, and trade. Well, when government requires that you give them a report when you deal in numbers over 3,000, 5,000, or 10,000, when you send your money or your wealth to Switzerland, when you make an economic transaction in Brazil and you have to report that to the government, that's the essence of slavery. That's the essence of totalitarianism. Now, Americans just accept that, just, you know, no big deal. Making a report every year to the government called a 1040 form is the essence of economic tyranny. It's the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. I certainly don't want to interfere with you people out there and your political freedoms, and if you want to practice communism, that's your choice in life. But it's not freedom. It certainly doesn't have anything to do with privacy. And if you want to make a report to government about all of your financial transactions and then pay government a portion for the use of their paper currency, you certainly have a right to do that. But shouldn't you ask yourself, is this really the wisest course of action for me to take? In short, is there something smarter for me to do? Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use in this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be political, hostile, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about depression. Now, the opposite to inflation is deflation. Now, we have other words that are in our vocabulary now. We call them stagflation. Stagflation. That's where you have inflation, but your economy isn't growing. And then we have depression, this thing that we refer back to the 1930s, where people lose their jobs and there's no inflation. Prices of goods are going down, but money is becoming less and less available to people. Now, Helicopter Ben is printing money at the rate of, I think the last numbers I saw, 17%. 17% money growth. Now, inflation is running at about 11.5% here in the United States, and they expect it to go up to around 15% in the year 2008. Now, we're not quite to the stage where we see or where we feel the effects of hyperinflation, but get ready, it's coming to a city near you very shortly. And that's because the monetary policy is to avoid deflation by rapidly inflating. Now, we're constantly fighting inflation, but, you know, the news media constantly tells us, well, inflation is a problem and we're fighting inflation and Bernanke is battling inflation and we're worried about inflation. But then when you talk about the D word over here, oh my God, we got to avoid that like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now, I mentioned this a little earlier. From 1865 to 1900, we went through a period of deflation. But we didn't have an economic depression. There wasn't any depression. We built 186,000 miles of railroad. It was the biggest industrial expansion in the history of the United States in those 35 years. Biggest. Never before, never again have we had an economic expansion like those 35 years. And if you'd have put $100 in the bank in 1865, in 1900 you could have drawn it out, and you'd have had $2 more purchasing power than you did when you deposited it there. The money held its value. We used gold and silver coin. We went through deflation. Deflation is not a bad word. Deflation's good. Deflation is where your money becomes more valuable. Now, today it's a bad word, and everybody tells you, oh, we got to avoid deflation. Well, they also tell you we have to avoid inflation, so now what are you going to do? But they're constantly printing more money, and as they constantly print more money and expand the money supply, they grow the economy. And ideally, they tell us that we should do this at the rate of 2 or 3% a year. All right. Well, if you expand your economy by 3% a year by printing more money, then every 25 years, your purchasing power is cut in half. Your money is worth half. From 1980 to 2000, the money in America lost 50% of its purchasing power. From 1930 to 2000, the money in America lost 97% of its purchasing power. Now, when people are talking about the loss of our purchasing power, hell, it's already been accomplished. It's done. You're not arguing over the value of a dollar. You're arguing over the last 3 cents, which, by the way, over the last 7 years has lost a third of its purchasing power. So now it's only worth 2 cents compared to 1930. I mean, kids, you know, when you're down to the last 2 cents, now you're arguing about pennies now. Now, the reason that I bring this to your attention is that as bad as that is or has been over the past 70 years, we ain't seen nothing yet. There's a catastrophe brewing. A catastrophe. And it's going to envelop all of us. It's going to affect George Gordon just like everybody else. I hope it affects me less than you. You know, it's not that I'm wishing you any bad luck, you know, or I'm sitting over here saying, God, I hope you guys go to hell in a handbasket. But I'm frankly just concerned about me. I'm really just totally selfish, and I'm just thinking about, well, how in the hell can I save my chestnuts from the fire? I'm not really that concerned about you and your chestnuts. I always tell my students, you know, if you can save yourself out of this, you'll be doing a big service to yourself and to your family. It's not likely that everybody's going to get saved out of this. In fact, I can look at you and tell you it's not going to happen. Just like the Titanic, you know, there's victims and there's survivors. There's people that will survive it, all right. But there's going to be more victims than survivors. And I'd like to be one of those survivors. Now, exchange is a prerequisite of liberty. Always remember that. If you can't freely buy, sell, and trade, then you don't have liberty. And then in America, we are not free to buy, sell, and trade. We're regulated and controlled to the nth degree. If you think you can buy and sell houses anonymously, which you can under our Constitution, you can buy and sell houses and real estate anonymously, but none of you out there listening to me has ever done that. I do it. I can buy 40 acres and I can sell it and never record it. And nobody ever knows that I ever owned it or ever had anything to do with it. I can buy it for, you know, they talk about dollars here in this country, you know, $30,000 or $50,000. I don't buy land like that. I buy it for hundreds of dollars in gold coin, and then I sell it for hundreds of dollars in gold coin and avoid those thousands and thousands. Thousands and thousands of inflated dollars. What in the hell value is there in all of this inflation? Where is it? What is it that you can point to that's been good about it? You haven't got any economic privacy. You can't go out and buy a new car and keep it private. That's a public transaction recorded by your state. So without this exchange, this prerequisite of liberty being freedom of exchange, then there's something else that's taken its place, and it's a totalitarian economic system. And it's funded by, and it's headed by, the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for a central bank. The hell do you need a central bank for? Why do you people need banks? What the hell is that all about? There isn't anything in the Ten Commandments establishing a bank. There isn't anything in our Constitution establishing a bank. You've got them. I don't deny it. But it didn't come from your founding fathers, and it didn't come from your creator. Somebody thunk it up, all right, but it isn't something that's of any value or benefit to Joe Sixpack out here as a plumber. Now, you might believe that it is. Now, the Benito Mussolini philosophy of monetary systems was this. He says, all for the state, making outside, or nothing outside of the state, and nothing against the state. Now, that's fascism. It was Mussolini's philosophy. All for the state, nothing outside of the state, and nothing against the state. Now, this state becomes God. This state violates the first commandment. You shall have no other gods before me. Now, our Creator told us that. We don't listen much to him, but he at least took the time, you know, to tell you that that was a bad public policy. Mussolini came along and said, what you want to do is you want to follow me. George Bush says, hey, you want to vote for me. Hillary Clinton says, you want to vote for me. Barack Obama says, hey, vote for me. I ain't voting for any of those jerks. I don't need some politician to lead me. I can lead myself. And I think I do better by myself. I remember for years, I used to let other people manage my money. I was never satisfied with it. I remember a fellow advised me one time. He says, what you need is to invest money in Northwestern Mutual Insurance Company. So I did. And I let Northwestern Mutual manage my money. I was not happy with their management. Another one said, put your money in Bank of America. And I did. And I put my money in Bank of America, and they paid me interest. And I wasn't happy with the way Bank of America took care of my money. Another one said, what you need to do is get a Social Security number, pay income tax, and let the United States of America regulate and control you. So I said, well, that sounds like a good idea. So I tried that. So I filed my tax returns every year, and I let the United States of America regulate and control me, and I wasn't happy with the way the United States managed my money either. And then one day I woke up and I said, what would happen if George Gordon could learn how to manage his own money? It was a wild thought on my part. I said, just think of it. If the insurance company, the banks, and the government hasn't managed your money in a way that you approve of, or the way in a manner that you like, if they're not making you money, if they're not doing the job for you, what would happen if you did it for yourself? And I was sternly warned against that. I was told, you can't live without banks, insurance companies, and government regulating and controlling you and managing your money and your economic future. And I thought, ah, shucks, I'm unhappy and miserable the way I am now. Let me give it a try. So I did. I actually went out and I started practicing the Ten Commandments, especially the eighth, the one that says, thou shalt not steal. You know, wild new idea. Thou shalt not steal. Then I got into sound money, hard money, this Ludwig von Mises money, gold coin, silver coin. I went back to practicing, you know, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. And I've been doing that now for about 25 years. I am just tickled pink. I don't fill out 1040 forms. I don't have a bank account. I don't send any premiums off to insurance companies. And when I make a dollar, I keep the whole thing all to myself. The whole damn thing, I keep it all. It's the economics of being a pig. I'm just a total hog. I go out and work and keep it all. Isn't that something? Yeah, it's a wild new concept. Now, that's what our founding fathers, and that's what God at Mount Sinai had in mind. It was limited government and free exchange. and gold coins are anonymous. That's a wild new idea. Now, Mussolini was, in fact, an exceptionally intelligent man with the operatic excesses, and when the operatic excesses are peeled away, he boiled his politics down to the total state. Mussolini, therefore, became the father of the political term later known as totalitarianism. He was bluntly specific about this in all of his speeches. He said, if classical liberalism spells individualism, fascism spells government. And with this statement, individual freedom died in Italy after he gained government, because freedom is living without any government coercion. Did you catch that, children? Freedom is living without any government coercion. Operating word is any. I mean, if you need some government coercion, and here's Hillary Clinton, she says we need an economic stimulus package. Well, okay, you people get after your economic stimulus package. Leave me out. I want to practice anonymity. I want to be able to buy, sell, and trade with gold coins that are totally anonymous. I don't need a 1040 form. I don't need a report to the bank. I don't need a financial statement. I can count my own money. I don't need any banker to count it for me or to take a share thereof for his expertise. All right. Now, one more thought here. Remember, this comes from the privateer. I'm going to tell you about the privateer where you can get a copy of it. Let me do that right now. The publisher is a fellow by the name of William A.M. Buckler, and they've got a web page. It's www.the-privateer.com. Why don't you get that down? www.the-privateer, spelled P-R-I-V-A-T-E-E-R.com. And they've got an email. It's cap@the-privateer.com. Why don't you send him an email and say, listen, I heard about your newsletter on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and I want the January issue, the early January issue number 594. I mean, this is education that you won't get in college. I mean, if you've got an economics degree, you won't learn the truth about hard money any faster, any better from anybody that can teach it any more succinctly than this guy Buckler can. In fact, I can tell you over the last 4 or 5 years, I don't think that I've ever picked up an issue of The Privateer that I haven't learned something new from it. This guy is a phenomenal teacher. Now, when you tell him that you heard this on the Law Hour, maybe you better not do that, come think of it. Just tell him you heard about it on the radio. He wrote me a letter one day, and he told me to take a long walk off a short pier, so I'm not too sure that I'm very popular down in Australia, at least with the privateer. But no matter what he thinks of me, I think the world of him. I think this guy has really got his head on straight. And so I want to tell you that, and then I want to recommend his newsletter. It's about $180 a year, $180 Australian dollars a year. And I know sometimes people will say, oh, my God, $180 a year. That's chicken feed. Hell, you spent thousands of dollars. You people out there are in debt, tens of thousands of dollars that you paid to go to college, for crying out loud, paying interest on that, and didn't learn one-tenth what you can learn in the privateer for $180 a year. You didn't need to spend thousands of dollars and put yourself in debt for the rest of your life going to college to learn economics had you subscribed to the privateer or maybe to the international forecaster. Now I want to differentiate. The international forecaster is for adults. I got to tell you that. And Chapman is an adult. And Chapman's not a teacher. He's not trying to teach anybody. He's a reporter. And he's reporting hard facts. And he's hard to read. I mean, you got to be an adult. So, I mean, if you've been to high school or college and you got a degree after your name, you may have a hard time reading Chapman in the International Forecaster. Because it's hard news, and it's hard to take. I got a student out in Hawaii the other day. He got a copy of the International Forecaster. I think my wife sent him one. In fact, they come out twice a week, and I got stacks of them sitting around here. If you'll send me a stamped self-addressed envelope, you know, you got to put about two stamps on it. I'll stick one of them in an envelope and send it back to you. But make sure that it's one of the big envelopes, you know, those 8.5 by 11 envelopes, because it's 20 pages. I mean, it's kind of a big newsletter. And I'll just stick an old one in there and send it to you. Or you could call Chapman. Remember, he's down at Punta Gorda, Florida. It's called the International Forecaster at Yahoo.com. Send him an email and say, hey, send me a copy. He can send it right out over your email. Now, you can tell him that you heard it here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. He's not hostile to me, but and maybe Buckler isn't as hostile as I think he is, but he wasn't all that friendly to me. I remember when we talked to him. But I wanted to recommend it to you because this guy Buckler is a teacher. He's a natural teacher. And that's why I thought I'd take a few minutes here and explain this to you. Because in the overall deflation, as Kitco put it this way, let me butt in here for a second. Kitco has a guy writing for him. He's just one of many. His name is Richard Doty, and he's the Mogambo guru. And he puts out a paper, two pages or three, every Friday. Just go to Kitco, K-I-T-C-O, didn't cost you anything, kitco.com, and you can get a number of these economic newsletters. Listen to what he said here. He said, but it was the subhead of the financialpost.com story that grabbed me by the heart and almost killed me, as it said, BMO strategist Donald Cox warns credit crunch and soaring oil prices will pale in comparison to the looming catastrophe. And if you did not know that people are idiots in groups and or the word catastrophe is a BBT, then hold on to your seats because you're about to get the education of your life. Because the impact of tighter food supply is already evident in raw food prices, which have risen 22% in the past year. He says, yikes, 22%. 22% rise in food prices over the past year. Some food prices have doubled in the past year. Doubled. And now we're on to ethanol. And boys and girls, the prognosticators are telling us, get ready for a doubling of food prices for the year 2008. Now we're approaching hyperinflation here, kids. Hyperinflation. And when that comes, there's going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. I mean, there's going to be heartache everywhere. And in order to understand that before it happens, to avoid that when it occurs or happens to others, requires some input and it requires some foresight. It's going to require some action before the fact. Now, in the past, I've said, you know, watch for what's coming. Now I can tell you, take a look around you, because now it has come. It is here. The meltdown worldwide is occurring right in front of your eyeballs. What these people have been prognosticating for the last 30 years is now front and center. Now, liberty is solely the extension of freedom to include coercion by all other men. If nothing is left outside the state, then both individual freedom and liberty have died. The crudest way to accomplish this is the situation where a government presses upon a man or woman some small printed pieces of paper with numbers on them and then calls it money, and then compels these same people to accept these pieces of paper with legal tender laws that they have also enacted. That government then usurps triumphantly such people's private property while having the audacity to claim that the people receiving the money have not only been paid, but have also earned an income, which they will be backed later to tax. Now, Thomas Paine understood this with great precision. He said there are two distinct classes of men, those who pay taxes and those who receive and live upon taxes. John Bright, of British anti-corn law fame, always said that it was a clash between the taxpayers and the tax eaters. Frederick von Hayek dealt with this more than a half a century ago in three books called Monetary Theory and the Trade Cycle, Prices and Production, and Monetary Nationalism and International Stability. And he also dealt with the political direction in which we're traveling in his immortal book, The Road to Serfdom. Today, most nations are suffering from fast climbing consumer prices while facing at the same time deep economic recession and even depression. And this has happened solely because the above economic and political knowledge has been ignored for too many years. But it can be ignored no longer. Now, there's a business cycle, and the next program we'll take a look at the business cycle in greater detail. And we'll explore more of this thing called hard money, hard currencies. Our founding fathers didn't give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose, and our government did not take our gold and silver away from us for no good purpose either. Your government knows that in order to control you, they have to have control of your money, control of your economics. That's why they have induced you into these humongous mortgages and school debts. That's why they have created this credit debt serfdom in this country. It is to reduce you to a feudal serf. And if you're using paper money, join the crowd. Now, if you want to get out of feudal debt serfdom, then get out of paper money. That's just that simple. Now, fortunately, we Americans, Canadians, and Australians have gold coin available to us. Our governments actually mint it. I don't think it's because your government wants it. I think it's because God Almighty, your Creator, has mandated it. We have gold and silver available to us. Now we need to learn how to use it and profit thereby. Gold and silver, the old adage goes. Gold is the currency of kings. Silver, the currency of gentlemen. Barter is the currency of peasants. And debt is the currency of slaves. And if you're in debt, that's slavery. Yeah, I'm out of time. We're going to have to leave it right there. So let me give you a final reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school direct at 417-273-4967 and ask for it. That's area code 417-273-4967. Now, all of these law or programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.